Hello and welcome to the Carson Anderson program. Anderson is back. Hello, Anderson.
Hello, Karsh.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
That's good. You spent yesterday on the golf course in the Rocket Classic Media Day outing, which is part of something you do annually, which I hope isn't totally 100% diggity done, but did you come away with any hope that there's might be a new sponsor found or anything, or is that
The term never say never was thrown out there a couple times. I think they're sad that this is it's the way it's happening, but I think they also understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's too bad. I wonder if anything changes, because they've made changes to the golf course I assume it's to appease the PGA. And they had a video with some of the players talking about the changes that are being made, and because they've been updated with pictures and videos and stuff. And you know, Ricky Fowler is obviously he's like one of the spokespeople with this tournament because of his close ties with Rocket. And the golfers that were on the camera and talking about it, they all said the right things. Well, we like the changes they're making. It's adding more character to the course, and we got to play the South Course, which is not the course where the tournament is going to be held on. Typically in years past, we play the exact course that the pros will play. But because it's still under construction, it's been under construction for 11 months, we weren't able to get on there. But you could see once you got to, when we were finishing up, it was a shotgun start, so we started on 5. But you could see some of the changes. And one of the holes, it's remember the 313 area, right, where you have the par 5. If any golfer gets an eagle on the par 5, a hole in one, and then a birdie on the par 4 in the 3 consecutive holes, there's a lot of money donated to charity, and somebody can also wins a big prize if they do it. But regardless, there's tons of money donated for every eagle, every hole in one, or every birdie on those three holes. And what centers those three holes is this little pond. And the pond is no longer there. They filled it in. And it's a different kind of grass. It's in there now. So it's startling to see, actually. Like, whoa, like that's different. But also there was a massive difference between the course we played was great, in great shape. But then you looked over at the championship course and how that's going to look. And I've never seen it look better.
Really?
Like it really, it's startling how different it looks compared to the course we played on. And we played on a nice course.
I mean, at the core of this, I guess I'm slightly pissed at the PGA Tour pros. I feel like not enough of them decided to come here and support this event. And, you know, look, we're not an exotic locale. Got it. But an opportunity to expand the game and expose it to people inside the city of Detroit proper is a cool thing. And I just... Had there been greater, bigger names, there would have been better attendance. And every year when we saw a name we recognized commit, you and I would get, hey, oh, cool. Yeah. And we'd applaud it. And Golf Guy would text our show and tell us,
in the top 10.
Yeah, he's rated 31st in the world. Who cares? And I'm like, okay, got it. Yeah. But.
And it is a shame. It's a shame. You know, it was a tournament that you weren't going to see Rory McIlroy, you know. But when it started, you did see some guys. I mean, albeit it would be like one or two of the top guys. Like Dustin Johnson played 1 year. Bryson DeChambeau won it 1 year.
You'd have to go back and look. Mickelson. Somebody could look up and come up with like the best field they ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And why didn't it build from there?
Well, COVID hit, which was
COVID
big,
hit, and then the signature events. Liv sucked a bunch of guys.
Well,
all the
Liv
more
came
reason
first,
why
and then they came Liv up with the signature
sucks,
events.
Okay, yeah. Everything about Liv sucked. It just sucked. As a casual golf fan, hated Liv. But Liv didn't help. Then they deemed the signature events. Detroit didn't get that status.
Right, which that killed them. And, yeah. then the placement on the schedule didn't do them any favors.
You know, and I sit here and you go to that thing yesterday, and I love that they're never say never, but it's probably not happening.
No, it's probably not, unless things change. I mean, like you say, never say never. You can come up with somebody else might want to sponsor, or they get a corporate sponsorship from somewhere else. Maybe it's, you know, General Motors or Ford Motor Company, or somebody else can step up and do this. But I mean, you're going to have to, there's so much money involved to make it one of those signature events, or to get the this idea of tier one and tier two that the PGA Tour is considering. It's such a haves and have nots scenario that, like, who in the right mind wants to go and pay top dollar to go see tier two?
It deems this some tournaments like minor league events.
Yeah, it really does. I think it's so stupid.
You know why they're doing this? It's because they're all responding to LIV.
Right, but LIV's done. Like, you don't, I mean, this is so, it's so aggravating because, but this new system they're going to come up with, like, I don't know if it starts next year or not. It's beyond dumb. And I don't know why you went to the world of beyond dumb when you could just simply, you know, try to tweak what you have. This is a major change, and it's going to turn people off from going to these other events. Like, you know, it's great to watch these events and you see thousands of people gathered at the 18th green waiting for the finisher to come in. And hey, are we going to get a playoff? Let's get a play. Everybody wants a playoff. And then you're going to have these tier two events where there's going to be dozens waiting at the 18th hole to see guys finish. It's not the same. It's going to be awful. But hey, look, there's still plenty of, there's like, what, 6 weeks until this tournament? I think this comes up at the end of July into early August. And so there's still like five, six weeks to where people will say, hey, I'm going to play. And I know last year, even up to like the a few days before, you had people committing late and late. So yesterday they got a commitment from Wyndham Clark. I guess it was a commitment earlier from Siwoo Kim and some others. And
Wyndham Clark.
Xander Schauffele is going to play.
We were planning on talking about Wyndham Clark and Wyndham Clark yesterday already because of what he did at the Canadian Open. You saw that?
Yes.
With the USA hockey jersey. It was freaking awesome. He put on a Jack Hughes jersey and teed off at the Canadian Open. It got booed and then rolled it within 5 feet and birdied the hole and waved at the crowd as he got booed off the green. It was kind of a good, fun trolling kind of deal. And
that was hated all Sunday.
Yes, but whatever. This guy is, you know, coming to Detroit adds a little bit to the personality. And it just feels like it's all for naught, though. It feels like every time they got a big name in the past, I was looking for this event to get better footing. And we needed everything to go right. We needed the big names to commit. We needed a better spot on the calendar. Probably needed that signature event status and got really none of it. And I guess we shouldn't be stunned that in the end it goes away.
Now, but I wonder if they've got stuff on a pull, you know, something pulled up under their sleeve there where it's because it's the grand finale of the event, will they somehow try to make it more appealing to some of the bigger names in golf or really appeal to them? And because you can't pay them off. I mean, that's illegal. You can't do that to get them to come. But there are ways around that, you know, to donate money to different charities and stuff. What? But I don't know. I would love to see if they were able to get a couple of the monster names. Like if you got Scottie Scheffler or Rory McIlroy to show up. I know it's a dream, but it's something that would really transform the event. And it would be either a nice way to go out or something that pumps life back into the idea that let's keep this event going. And let's see how the course, I mean, the way the course was looking, like I said, I've never seen it look like that. It looks fantastic. I wonder if that makes a difference to the players on tour. Those guys are there like, oh my God, they really stepped it up.
But it's not too late, huh?
They say never say never. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm ready to play.
How'd you play?
Well, I played quite well yesterday.
Did you? Not a boy. Was it play your own ball or was it a scramble?
It was play your own ball.
And who'd you play with? He brought a scorecard in.
Played with Evan and Rieger.
Yeah.
And Jason.
You brought your scorecard in?
It was that good. And Jason Colthrop from Channel 4.
Did you bring in your mock draft too?
I did not.
Doug, what are you reading right now?
He's reading the scores.
If this is true, this is your best round of your life by far.
Yes.
I'll go check the veracity of what he just showed me.
I will also say this though. It played to a par 68. So there were only two par fives, right. But there were six par threes and 10 par fours.
We have somebody to play with you. I'll check the veracity of this. Okay.
Well, it's his handwriting, so that should help you out.
Carson Anderson, 91. Nice M1. All right, from Chris in Houston. Hate to break it to you guys. No interest from pros and their corporate partners in Detroit golf event. No history, no local players. Dud. we're well aware of there being no history. We're well aware that not enough of the big pros showed up. We're well aware of many of its failings, and which is why at the conclusion of our conversation last segment, we said everything had to go this tournament's way. And a lot didn't. A lot didn't. Not getting the preferred event status. What's it called? I'm blanking. Where you get the extra prize money. Signature event status. Not getting a good spot on the calendar didn't help. No. We're aware.
And it's a much better spot on the calendar now. Unfortunately, it looks like it's too little too late. You know, they've made changes to the golf course that might be too little too late. But we'll see. I don't know. Like I said, there's still 5 weeks or so to go to try to lure players to commit to this event. And there are some bigger names. And there are plenty more big names that they can go after. I think it'd be great if they can get J.J. Spahn to commit. Remember, he won the U.S. Open last year, and then he was committed to play in the Rocket. And he said, well, I just need some time to relax.
He committed before he won the U.S. Yeah. Open. Then he won the U.S. Open.
And backed out. Yeah. So this is a better time in the calendar, I think, because it gets more competitive too when you get towards the end and towards the FedEx Cup, and everybody wants to jockey for their position, where they want exemptions from the first tournament of that they have to move up in the standings. And if you're going to do that, well, you got to accumulate points. How do you accumulate points? By finishing high in other tournaments.
Do you? I mean, I'm a casual golf fan. But I do watch and I do like it and I do play. But there's no minimum number of tournaments you have to play, right?
I don't know. I think there is.
But is there?
Yeah.
That number should be higher if there is. you should support the events.
Yes, you should. But at the same time, they recognize that there was an appeal to live that was beyond the money. And some of that appeal was you're playing less events so people can have more of their life back. Liv gave them the best of every world. You got to play fewer events. You got to play fewer rounds because you were only doing three rounds instead of four. And you were paid ridiculous sums of money. And on top of that, they did this shotgun start thing and everything was the whole tournament was done, or each round was done in 5 hours. There were a lot of things that appealed to golfers with that. Unfortunately, it pulled some really great golfers away from the PGA Tour, and then we're stuck in a mess we are. But one of the things the PGA Tour has done to try to combat that is create the signature events. It is, which also makes the better golfers want to play in those events and not the others, so it does hurt, ultimately, the other tournaments like Rocket. It's too bad.
Mike from Sterling Heights says, I was lucky enough to grow up at the Detroit Golf Club. I think it's too easy for these guys, to be honest. I think it's the first or second easiest tournament each year.
Well, I don't know if that really...
against the Buick Open.
Yeah, look, how many events are we watching where there are scores that are in the 20s for being 20 under par? We see a bunch of those, and yet they still get played. They recognize that, I think, at DGC, and that's why they've made some major changes to the course. Upcoming, and we'll see if it's more difficult if the scores are in the high teens and low 20s as opposed to the mid to high 20s.
Nick in Shelby Township, the Rocket always got shafted by the tour schedule. That's the biggest issue for the weak fields. Sandwiched between two majors and playing after the U.S. Open and Travelers screwed them because none of the big name guys want to play 3 weeks in a row with a third event like the Rocket. He wrote, isn't a signature event or major. I think he needed a comma there. Playing the third in a row like the Rocket was, it wasn't a signature event or a major. Yeah.
There you go.
Not sure how true this is, but I heard a rumor that the Rocket mortgage will end up being moved to Oakland Hills. That's from Vince.
I haven't heard anything like that, but I'm not tuned into all the inner workings of that. I don't know if the Oakland Hills members would want that. Oakland Hills is getting some monster events over the next 20 years. They're in this rotation of some pretty big events. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'd want to be tied up where that course is shut down.
Well, I heard something today that members basically don't get to play the PGA course because they're working on it so much.
Which one?
At DGC.
Right now, they're not.
Yeah.
But right now, because it's under construction still. So they will, I heard that they will open it up once it's ready, that they'll have like a week or two to play on it, but that they'll have to walk the course. They're not going to have carts on that course right. to try to keep it as fresh as they can.
I heard a rumor too, guys, that the Rocket Mortgage is actually going to Hammond, Indiana. And so, I mean, they are just on the up right now.
Hammond is a city on the rise. Yeah. Yeah.
They're hot.
Yeah.
Hansel hot.
That's right. Johnny so from Rochester says, how about Ford or Penske for sponsorship? Obviously, both have major ties in the Detroit market.
I think there are plenty of people that could sponsor an event, but if you're not going to be guaranteed to get that tier one mm-hmm. status, then what's the point? I mean, honestly, I don't blame anybody for not doing it. Who wants to go to a tier two event? Unless you're a diehard golf fan, I don't really want to see, you know, the 60 through 120 ranked golfers in the world playing.
So who's the YouTuber that's playing? Isn't there some?
I forget. Yeah, there is. He's a former pro.
Yeah.
Former collegian, like runner-up or something like that to the championship. And he was with the Good Golf guys, I believe, or the Good Golf guys. And he is a YouTuber, yeah.
And influencer. He was given a exemption to play.
Yes. It's not like he's, I mean, he's an actual golfer. He's like really good.
Okay. This might sound a bit crazy.
Not PGA Tour good.
But it might help attendance a little bit. And I'll be more interested for sure.
Yeah, there will be people that would be interested in that.
I'm about to propose another exemption.
Oh, here we go.
You.
Yeah, that's right.
Gator shot at 81 yesterday at media day. So give Gator the exemption.
I don't think they're far off. I mean, they're trying anything. Right.
They're getting really hard up with that.
No disrespect.
Let's get Gator out there.
If they want a younger crowd, get Bluey and Peppa out there. My kids might show some interest.
Okay.
Did you get that verified?
Yes, I did. Very short, I was told. The course was very short.
I said it was. Yeah. I put the caveat. It was par 68. Still beat Rieger by 11 strokes.
As one does. All right, so
it's nine strokes. I'm sorry.
Wild Tiger game last night. Wild Tiger game.
Very wild.
Yes.
And awfully wet.
I mean, the headline's Cole Keith, right? The 2-run homer in the third to put the Tigers up 4-1. I think 4-0 at the time. The 2-run shot down the line to put them up 8-3, and then the solo shot in the ninth.
The opposite field.
To put them up 9-3. Bobby Scales said he hit three different pitches out. It was a sweeper, a changeup, and a slider on the broadcast, which is awesome. And quite frankly, this is the correction. When people talk about corrections in baseball, this can happen both ways. This can happen when you're performing way above your head. The correction comes and you suck for like a month to get you back to what you normally are. But when you've sucked for a couple of months, and Cole Keith didn't suck, but he was hitting no extra base hits.
No, he had... Five games ago, so the mm-hmm. first 62 games, he had zero home runs and he had seven RBI.
Mm-hmm.
Seven in 62 games for someone who's, you know, pretty much in the top six in the order every game, if not in the top three. He had been playing way up in the order. Since that time, he's hit four home runs. So it's in his last five games, I believe, four or five games. He's hit four home runs and driven in nine. He's had quite a week, Colt Keith has. I'm glad to see it because I'm like, this guy is just, that frame is just too big and too large to not hit for any kind of power. And there he showed it last night, three home runs, bringing his average up to 267 on the season. More importantly, bringing up his OPS. Welcome to the 700 club again, Colt Keith. Good to see it. And let's see if he can be steady now. I don't expect him to be... you know, hitting three home runs a week, let alone in a single game. But I do expect to see some power out of that bat, and we did see it last night, and it was great to watch. And I think for him, you could just see sighs of relief all the time. When he hit the first one last week, and it looked like, you know, he would help to blow that ball over the wall because it just exhale, you know, 420 feet later was just great. You root for a guy like that because he has to be part of this team's future. They took a chance on him. They gave him a little bit of a contract. Well before he was due, right? Mm-hmm. They gave him a little bit of money and said, all right, we're going to invest in you for 7 years at whatever it is, $5 million a year, something like that. But they gave him the money, some money. they want to see return on that investment. And last night is a monster step in the right direction. It's one game, but let's hope this jump starts the rest of his season and he starts to develop into that player that you all thought he could be.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's helpful along, but there was a lot of talking points out of last night's game because it was wild. It really was wild.
Stuff that happened before the game.
Right, sure. With another Tiger injury, we don't know how serious Troy Melton's is, but then obviously Glaber goes down during the game, and that looks like it might be more serious. We'll get into some Tiger stuff coming up a little bit more in depth a little bit later on, but straight ahead, we have got our Detroit Red Wings Trade Center, spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, news aggregate update blitz thingy, as there is maybe more teams getting involved with Dylan Larkin, including one that really has something intriguing to shop. We will get to that today at 10:31 on Carson Anderson on 97.1. Carson Anderson, 97.1. Okay, look, we got an ongoing story in Detroit with Dylan Larkin. Everybody is talking about him around the NHL, and we update you every couple days on the very latest reporting and what's being said. We call it the Detroit Red Wings Trade Center aggregate update blitz thingy. All right, Gator, let's start with this from David Pagnotta from the Fourth Period at NHL Network. He's reporting that the Red Wings and Dylan Larkin on that front, quote, it sounds like it's more of a futures-based package, at least right now. Is this a star-for-star type of swap? It doesn't sound like it. So, a couple things here. That implies it's a general manager, if he's comfortable making a trade like this for futures, is making a trade thinking he's going to be around for a while to see said futures. People already are questioning whether or not Yzerman should be making this trade. Ultimately, it's his job to make the best trade for the Detroit Red Wings, whether he gets to see the fruits of the trade or not. Because if it's all for like draft capital or young affiliated draft prospects that have been drafted and are playing right now, still in college or whatever, like Porter Marton was last year when he was with Philly. But the point is, you got to make the best trade, even if the Red Wings trade Dylan Larkin and see maybe even nothing at the NHL level in return coming back.
Well, I take this into mind, too. This reporter doesn't know because this has spoken to Steve Yzerman. The only way he would have information is if he's spoken to somebody, sources from the other teams that are looking to talk to the Red Wings. And then what are you getting? Is he getting the half the story where it's, let's say you're dealing with Minnesota. Minnesota says, well, we're only going to be giving up prospects. So if you want Dylan Larkin, it's going to have to be for prospects. You're not getting the whole story, so you don't know.
Because you're only getting the other team's
version. You're only getting the other team's version. You're certainly not getting Steve Yzerman's version, and I doubt that Chris Draper or anybody else in the hierarchy is going to leak anything to the media about what's going on. So I don't know if that's entirely accurate. Is it logical to think that that's what teams are going to offer? I think it's logical to think that if you're going with the original three teams, you know, if you're looking at whatever it was, Vegas and Minnesota and Florida, the other team, if you're going to restrict it to those teams that are ready to win a Stanley Cup now, that don't want to give up anybody from the core, of course that makes sense that they would only give up prospects. Does that make sense for the Red Wings? Well, it depends on how deep your prospect pool is, what your draft pick is in this upcoming draft or future draft picks that you would give up. I think when you're dealing from those teams that are really good, they may not have the great prospect pool. So I'm not sure that the deal's ever going to get done with those top tier teams because they just may not have enough.
Yeah, look, and I will say this. If for Steve Yzerman, if all he's getting back is prospects and draft picks and nobody that's NHL ready, you almost need the NHL media to say, well, he got a ton. Even though none of it's going to be in the winged wheel this year, he got a ton. Because if it's a stretch, I think this town is going to revolt.
It could, but there are other things that this trade is so interesting and what could end up happening, because I think if you're going to deal with a top tier team, you're probably going to have to bring in a third team. And that third team might have the NHL ready player. True. Or the player that's on the roster that makes sense. So keep that in mind, and also keep an open mind that, you know, the move, if you end up trading Dylan Larkin for prospects, it frees up $8.5 million on your cap space. And that allows for, either trading for another team's higher priced player that they don't want. You've got prospects that you can trade, and you've got money now to spend in free agency too on some of these other players.
All right. Well, we will continue to monitor. But there are teams calling, apparently, and there's a lot of talk. Peñota went on to say that he's heard other teams are getting involved, but Detroit is still in a tough spot. Okay, that is courtesy of the Hello Hockey podcast. He mentioned San Jose. San Jose has the number two overall pick. Could the number two overall pick be a satisfying return from San Jose, maybe with some other stuff, but somebody who is NHL ready, but not a top-tier prospect? Number two overall pick, there are some guys that are close to NHL ready at the top of this draft.
Yeah, you look at everybody thinks get Gavin McKenna, the kid who played at Penn State last year, that he'll be the top pick in the draft. And then you've got, you know, a number of guys at number two that may be there. Ivar Stenberg is the Swedish forward that's likely to go second overall. And, you know, because you play in a Swedish league, you're not throwing up crazy numbers. It's like you can't just look at stats and say, oh, this makes sense. It's a skill set, really, that you're looking at. And this guy is supposed to be an incredible playmaker. He's got great vision on the ice. He ended up with 33 points in 43 games last year. In the under 20 team, he had 18 points in 15 games last year with Sweden. So, but played internationally in the offseason there in the World Championships. So there's something there to like. I don't know if it's feasible if you're San Jose. You've done so well in the draft. Maybe you want to keep going that route and you've really mind very well the last couple of years, but the thought of adding Dylan Larkin to that team, if you're San Jose, if I were the Sharks, I'd do it because you've got a young team, and I haven't looked at their salary cap situation, but I think that I'm guessing they could probably handle it pretty well. But is that enough for the Red Wings in return to get the number two overall pick? One would think it probably is.
Yeah. Caleb Malhotra, who's played at Brantford of the OHL, had 84 points in 67 games. That is a stat league, by the way. And Keaton Verhoff, who is at North Dakota, is a right-hand shot defenseman who is 6'4 and over 200 pounds. So he would be a guy that could put on some more weight, but also guys that could be NHL ready.
And yeah, Malhotra's big, and he's the son of Manny Malhotra, who played a very physical game. So there's definitely appeal there.
Interesting. San Jose and the number two pick. Something to think about. In the meantime, on a Blackhawks podcast, the Blackhawks Breakaway on the Chicago Sports Network, they had Frank Saravelli on, hockey insider for TSN. He talked about Yzerman's challenge and what he thinks may happen. Okay, Volstead, I don't know how good or bad this kid is. I just keep hearing franchise goaltender, and it sounds like he's far outperformed whatever the Red Wings thought that Kosa was going to be, and they did take Kosa ahead of Volstead in that draft. But if you can get him to throw in Charlie Strammel, would you be happy with that return? How good would this goalie have to be for you to be happy with this return?
Well, I'm not interested in the goalie because Red Wings have goalies in their system. They have several goalies in their system, and you mentioned the Kosa was drafted ahead of Wallstedt, and Wallstedt played very well last year, 2.61 goals against average, and had a .916 save percentage in 35 games with the Wild. So it's already proven at the NHL level. But everything that the reporter had to say is accurate about goaltending. It changes one year to the next. They're very rare that you get this solid goaltender for like a 10-year block, and he's that guy. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's just so rare. It's going to be ups and downs. And I don't know if he's light years better than Sebastian Kosa, but he's gotten the opportunity where Seabass has not gotten the opportunity. And Sebastian Kosa may not even be the number one Red Wing prospect. It might be Postova or Trey Augustine, for that matter. If the Red Wings were to make a deal with Minnesota, and right now I kind of don't even want it to happen out of spite because I don't want Dylan Larkin to get his way and go to the team that he desperately wants to go to because I don't think it's fair. But let's say they do work out a deal there. And Wallstedt would have to be part of it because he's their top prospect. The only reason I would do it is because I'd be able to spin either I'm spinning Wallstedt off for another player or I'm bringing in the third team, and it's just part of that trade. Again, this is where the third team makes sense. Strammel makes a lot of sense, the former Spartan product and also played at Wisconsin. He's a bigger kid, plays with an edge, and you know, can he be kind of like Porter Martone, I guess, in some ways. He wasn't as prolific at scoring as Martone was, but this was a guy who had over a point a game at Michigan State, and I think he had, 18, 19 goals in the 30-something games. I don't hate that. I feel like I'd still want something a little bit more than Strammel and Wallstedt, and I'm not sure if that's asking too much. How desperate is Minnesota to get that deal done? I think Minnesota might be more desperate than Detroit.
I think they might be, yeah. It could be one to keep an eye on. And that concludes the Detroit Red Wing Trade Center News Aggregate Update Blitz thingy here on Carson Anderson on 97.1. If you want to keep talking Red Wings, we will take your phone calls and feedback. Got some Tiger stuff to get to. There is a lot to talk about with last night's game, including a big picture look at what this team is up against. All that coming up here on Carson Anderson on 97.1. One thing's for sure as we talk our way through all this possibility with Yzerman and a Red Wing trade is there is one time constraint, and that is the draft is next week. And if he's looking for draft picks, San Jose, according to Pignota, San Jose is involved. If San Jose is involved, they have the number 2 overall pick. Florida's been dangling the number 9 pick, according to reports. And there are also confirmed reports that Florida's called and made an offer. So you'd have to think the number 9 pick was involved. And Yzerman has to decide, can I do better than draft picks? If not, which package of draft picks and players can I put together to make this worth my while? To have what is going into this offseason, the most coveted veteran asset out there in the conversation at the very least, but you know, it's not a great free agent market, and now you have a player like Dylan Larkin being asked to be traded, and so there's a market there. He's got to capitalize on having this asset. 248-539-9797. Let's go to Dennis in Farmington Hills. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, hi, Doug. And Gator. This was on NHL rumors last night, and it's when things are too good to be true, they're usually not true, but Vegas offering Pavel Dorieyov and Thomas Hertl to the Wings for Dylan Larkin. And again, it's a rumor, but I'll tell you this, if that was a solid offer to Steve Yzerman, if I'm Yzerman, I run to that trade.
Pavel Dorieyov's contract situation?
He's a restricted free agent, and so they're under a salary constraint. You know, all the things that Vegas does, they're hurting for money. They got dead money in Peter Angelo, a big contract, and he's not even playing. They want to re-sign Rasmus Anderson, and he's going to take a ton of money. So they're going to try to switch some contracts. They'd like to have Larkin, obviously, but Hertl signed for 4 more years. that that would be a good move for us. He's a good center, big time, 24 goals. This Dory Avoff, he had 12 goals in the playoffs, Doug, and he had his last 2 years he had 37 and 35 goals.
Yep. I mean, did he cite where he heard this rumor? Was this came? This was just look. I'm hesitant to give this any credence because we have no idea where it came from. Sounds a little too good to be true.
Well, and I agree with you on that, but I'll tell you one thing to add to what Gator said earlier. There's not a way in the world the Red Wings are going to be involved in a trade for this goalie from Minnesota. There's just no way. We're stockpiling goalies now.
I didn't say that. I said that there's no way that they would hang on to him. They'd have to be a third team involved. Where I think that if you're going to trade with Minnesota, he has to be part of it, but you're going to have to bring in another team because that's where he would go. He wouldn't come to the Red Wings. I can't imagine he'd come to the Red Wings.
Or they would start selling off their goalies.
Yeah.
And Doug, it's too good to be – it sounds too good to be true. But if that is an offer that he has from Vegas, I would run to that trade.
Yeah. What is this about trading a restricted free agent? What are the restraints there? Couldn't you also just make an offer for the player?
Yeah, it ends up being like a sign and trade, I would think. Yeah. But, you know, Hurdle signed for 4 more years at $8.1 million, and he's already 33.
Yeah.
But he's been productive. But are you just going to run yourself into the same situation as you have with like JT Compher and Andrew Kopp, which feel like they're all the same kind of player?
Yeah,
that they were more productive before they were Red Wings, and then they got them on the downside. And is this the same thing that's going to happen with Hurdle?
Feedback coming into the Carson Anderson inbox. Let's just hope a trade for Larkin includes another 160-pound, 5'8" Swede. That's from CJ, and I'm guessing that's sarcasm. Jim says, great, we give a team a proven first or second line center, and we get prospects. How many prospects worked out for the Wings so far? One hit out of 10? Looks like Wings fans get screwed again.
Well, Jim, got two not even just two, more than two. You've got the Mo Sider and Lucas Raymond. I think Simon Edmondson's a really good piece for the future as well. And we're still undefined with several others, but they've missed on a ton before Yzerman got here. And, you know, right now Marco Kasper doesn't look like that's panning out.
It's early, but yes, I'm not blown away, and I'm not blown away with the last couple of drafts, and I'm not blown away with any of the mid-round picks, but, you know, there's...
Why?
Because none of them were the big club.
I don't see them.
I get it, Jim.
Yet.
I mean, you're counting on Steve Yzerman to do a better job at acquiring prospects that have played professional hockey, most of them, more so than guys in the draft. That's why the draft picks, I mean, the number two overall pick is something he's never had. If San Jose is seriously a contender here, and that I would feel like that would have to be part of a deal. It's Yzerman's never had that kind of draft capital, so...
No, but then what did the person say that they didn't want? What type of player they didn't want?
They didn't want a 5'8" Swede.
Well, he's 6 feet and 180 pounds, but is Swedish.
Yeah. Philly, Utah, San Jose, those are not contenders. How about we keep Larkin and go sell the house and farm to acquire Werenski?
Zach Werenski, the defenseman with Columbus, who is, I just read something yesterday that said that he's kind of disgruntled with how things have gone with Columbus.
Go get Dylan a buddy.
I keep saying in the back of my mind, man, I think there's this 5% chance that they can find a way to acquire players where Larkin ends up saying, wait, I can work with this. I want to be part of this team.
It's interesting. We didn't play, but that Blackhawk podcast with Saravelli, they asked him, is there any scenario that he ends up back in Detroit? And he essentially said no. But I think it's more possible than Saravelli does.
Well,
because I don't think it's 100% no. He seemed to think it was 100% no.
Let me ask you this. And I think I might know where you're going on this. If you were upset because Red Wings didn't get Quinn Hughes,
mm-hmm.
with the package of players was rumored to be shipped off in that.
Yep.
Would you offer that same package or a similar package for Werenski? Because they're very similar players.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think about it. And... Look, everything doesn't have to be Team USA, go blue guys coming back. No. But and I want to make that clear. But if Dylan Larkin, if one of the reasons he's unhappy is because of the direction of the Wings and he wanted to go play with some of the Team USA guys, why don't the Red Wings go get one of those guys, which would make him better immediately and perhaps appease their star player?
Yeah, just so people know, Zach Werenski, a defenseman, had 22 goals last year and 81 points in 75 games.
John in Lake Orion says, Larkin could be a fit for the Sharks because it would definitely establish a team identity. San Jose has been faceless since the days of Joe Thornton.
Well, San Jose's incredibly young. You know, they're being led by Celebrini, who's outstanding, and Will Smith. These are two really young players just starting their careers. And, you know, Celebrini came on the second half of last year and ended up with 115 points last season. I mean, that's a guy you absolutely build around. Will Smith, 59 points in 69 games. They're young. They're going to go for it. And to add, it makes sense for them to add a guy like Dylan Larkin. I think it would make sense for them. Would it make sense for them to give up that second overall pick?
It's enticing for sure for Detroit. This is a crapper get off the pot for Stevie. No disrespect. He's still a unique person. Second greatest all-time player. We would all love his job. That's from an unnamed texter. I'm glad none of us have that job. But, yeah, I mean, everything we say about Larkin and the criticisms comes with the loved you as a player, rooted for you like crazy, tons of respect. You've built one championship team. It's not working here, unfortunately.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Let's get to some Tiger talk. And you got a thought you want to follow up on. We'll get to that today at 11:02. It's Carson Anderson on 97.1.